There is a new king in Belgium. The 20-year, largely ceremonial reign of King Albert ended with an abdication ceremony in Brussels. His son Philippe took the oath before Parliament to become Belgium's seventh king. In protest, one Flemish separatist party boycotted the ceremony, while the biggest opposition party sent only a limited delegation without its leader. Albert announced his abdication plans less than 3 weeks ago, so there was little time to turn the occasion into a huge international event. The capital of New Zealand, Wellington, was rattled by a strong magnitude 6.9 earthquake.
There hasn't been any injuries reported. Some damage has been reported in the area, but it's not quite specific which places have received the damage.
That's Jessica Turner with the National Geological Survey. New Zealand is part of the so-called Pacific Ring of Fire that receives regular seismic activity. I'm Ed Donahue, AP Radio News.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And I will say again, it's not that I'm cheap. I'm careful.
You're cheap.
Thank you.
Cheap, cheap, cheap.
Thank you.
Cheap, cheap, cheap.
All right,
thank
so
you.
We got a lot going on in the studio today, but one of the things we're going to do is finally settle the age-old question, wine or beer. I think we know how it's going
to
answer.
Does there have to be? Why does there have to be a winner?
Because the beeries are going to duke it out with the wineries.
I know, we have more beer people in here today than wine people. So.
And speaking of winers or wineries, Sebastian Zutant is with us. He's the owner of the newly famous, I guess, co-owner.
One of the owners.
Co-owner of the newly famous Red Hen.
Just got
a nice review in the Post.
Not bad.
Two and a half stars. That's
so
pretty good.
Nonchalant.
Aren't you happy?
I prefer four.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Something
that's
to look forward to.
We've all got things to shoot for.
Okay, and also back in studio, we have the Three Star Brewing guys. They are in studio with us. They brought us some excellent beer treats, and they brought with them Kendra Kuliga, who is their design guru. She does all their fabulous shirts.
Let's give
and
her a shout out. It's Cielo Design.
Cielo Design.
No, Cielo.
Cielo.
Cielo. Cloud, actually.
Yes.
Doesn't it? In Italian?
Well, yes.
Okay, there you go.
There we are.
Okay. Accidenti.
Okay.
Right. Well, they're all in because they've got this huge event coming up on July 28th, and we're going to talk all about it.
I can't wait.
And did you know Eat Local Week starts tomorrow? It does. And we thought it was perfect to bring in Danielle Vogel. She is in from Glenn's Garden Market. This is a brand new market that just opened about a couple months ago. It is a locally sourced full service grocery store. And we're going to find out about all the kinds of interesting things they do there. And she brought in with her Chef Mike Kiss. He brought in a bunch of delicious goodies. And we're going to get the 411.
All right. And let's keep going. Rick Cook is the executive chef, and Greg Scudlow is the GM at one of our favorite neighborhood restaurants.
It's down the street. It's right down the street from us.
Jeff and Barbara Black Extravaganza right up on Rockville Pike near us. And they've got a big crab feast coming up, and we're going to get a tutorial on how to pick a crab.
That's also on July 28th.
All right.
We have the dueling of the events going also on in studio.
And speaking of dueling, we've got a husband and wife team that are ready to duke it out.
Duke
here.
It out.
Beer or wine. Thor and Leia Chestnut.
I know. Normally it's us, but we're going to give it to them today.
That's
you
all
guys
right. You're my surrogate, Thor, on this one. We should say Leah's the wine director and somm at Riss Lacoste restaurant down next door to the Ritz-Carlton. And Thor is the managing partner of the soon-to-open Right Proper Brewing Company. It's going to open up right next door to the Howard Theater. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
You didn't have to mouth it. I knew that. I knew that. Okay.
Thor and Cheston, we need you guys both to come up to the mic.
Thor and Cheston?
Thor and Leah, sorry. Thor
Cheston. That's easy for you to say.
Right.
chest, Brock Willis.
So why? Let's start with you guys. Why can't we all just get along? Why? I mean, what can we do to help you guys resolve this beer and wine fight that apparently you're having that's ruining your marriage? I'm just saying.
Well, for the record, we do both enjoy both beverages.
Okay, good to know.
But when Leah gets home from work, she wants a cold beer.
And when we go at fine dining, Thor wants wine.
Okay, fair enough. So let's talk about how you guys both got into what you do and how you work together. Thor, you being
I sip this beer that Thor poured me.
The beer aficionado, and Leah, you being the wine aficionado.
I think it was just passion that got us into it. And then we turned the passion into our careers, which I think the American dream, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then, David, you're taking a sip of our very first beer that Right Proper Brewing Company brewed in collaboration with the Brewer's Heart up in Baltimore.
Mm.
The Brewer's Heart was actually my, my inspiration for getting into the beer industry and my aspirations to open a brew pub. And so it was quite fitting that we brewed our very first beer up there. So that is a Gruet. Brewed with a touch of smoked malt and fermented with the Blangy's yeast strain, which is a Belgian Saison yeast.
Neat.
So it's kind of
it all sounds
boundary
really
blurring.
But,
yeah.
But it's good beer.
Well, later in the show, we'll get into the brewery because we do want to talk about what you're doing there and what people can expect.
Well, I want to know what Leah poured here.
Okay.
So this is kind of different. This is a sparkling Gamay from the Beaujolais region of Burgundy, France. So Beaujolais kind of got a bad rep sort of with Beaujolais Nouveau. Most people think of it essentially as fresh crushed grape juice. But they make some serious stuff too. There's 10 crews in Beaujolais. But this is kind of unusual in that they make it sparkling. So they're not legally allowed to call it Beaujolais. So the label is very vague and just says, you know, G for Gamay, the grape grown in Beaujolais. And it's sparkling. So great for the summer, you know, kind of think a sparkling Shiraz or Lambrusco, light, fruity, but good for summer, good with charcuterie as well.
But now, why'd you guys put these against each other? I mean, is this something you would serve equally, like with a certain meal or a certain dish?
They're both something that you would serve at the beginning of your evening.
Okay.
You know, the Gruet is very, we call it Brimson and Clover. Brimson and Clover is very light, very low in alcohol, less than 5%, but still a lot of different spices.
I mean, you know, people say to me, why do you want to get up early on every Sunday morning and do a radio show? And I'm just staring at these two beautiful glasses of potables and all the food that's behind me. That's the answer, right?
Okay.
You should be excited to stare at your wife.
Well, I'm going
to.
Well, we're going to keep coming back to you guys. We're going to taste these. We'll come and talk about the. Would you shut up? Oh, my God. But we'll be back to you guys in a second. We want to turn to Sebastian and talk about Red Hen, which is a home run. Now, we've known you. You were with Johnny Moniz back in the day.
No doubt.
And how long ago was that? Like
10 years.
10 years?
10 years.
Yeah. I was with Johnny last night, actually. We were just talking about it.
And then you moved on to Proof?
From Comey, I went to Reseca. From Reseca,
oh, yeah.
I went to California to make wine. And then to Proof and Estadio. And then the Red Hen.
So it's a far cry from working in a restaurant and helping to run a restaurant to doing your own thing. What was the drive? Because it's a lot of responsibility.
To not work for people anymore. At some point, it's like either I'm going to do this for the rest of my life for myself or I'm going to figure out something else. And it was either I was going to move to California and make wine or I was going to move to someplace and make wine or I was going to open up my own place.
Well, but there's a big difference between deciding to make your own wine and opening up a restaurant. So why go with the latter?
It's actually easier. it's easier for me. It was easier for me to get into that avenue rather than trying to make. It's not like you can just walk into a winemaking job and be like, I want to make wine. So when I moved to California to
you
make
wine.
You mean
like wine, all the beer people in here? They just were like, hey,
I just opened a brewery.
But all those guys.
Thor's opening one. What's wrong with you?
But all these guys have experience in the past. So like, for example, when I moved to California, I was like, hi. And I was basically a cellar rat for 6 months, which is awesome. But, you know, I made $8 an hour. And, you know, at the position that I'm currently in my life, $8 an hour, don't cut it.
Okay.
So,
fair enough.
Regardless, this is also a really easy avenue for me to make my own wine. So this is one hand kind of gets me to the other, you know. So opening this door will make it very, very easy for me to make wine.
Well, let's talk about the restaurant because it really blew me out. I didn't know what to expect when we went there, and it's like this little gem.
Well, let's talk about the neighborhood. I mean, you opened up in an interesting neighborhood. Not a lot of restaurants opening up there at this time, given the amazing amount of restaurants opening up in this city.
Uh-huh.
You picked an interesting area and an interesting.
Well, let's talk about it. It's Bloomingdale,
it's
off of First Street Northwest, right?
Is that? Yep. My wife and my son and my dog live there. We've lived there for coming up on 6 years.
How come you didn't bring your dog today? You brought your wife and your kid, no
dog?
She's
still sleeping. She's a lovely girl. But we've lived there for coming up on 6 years now, and we just, you know, we've loved the area, we've loved the people that live there, and we just knew that the area was right for a restaurant of mm-hmm. this caliber.
And in working with Mike Friedman, the mm-hmm. chef, did you want an Italian restaurant? Was that something he wanted?
No, actually, it wasn't anything that anybody wanted. It kind of started off. So the reason it's called the Red Hen is because it feels comfortable, but it feels country. And mm-hmm. so the original idea was kind of like Joe Beef in Montreal, where there was like a consistently changing menu, but everything was kind of country by way of France.
Whatever country
England,
it came from.
Whatever, mm-hmm. right. You know, the South from the United States. So that was kind of the initial idea. But then we started going out to dinner and doing research and development, and we were just like, all right, we all like to eat pasta, so let's just go that way.
And that was it?
Yep.
And so for people who haven't been, because it's impossible to get in, for people who haven't been in yet, talk about the menu a little bit and the kinds of things
sure.
that are on available, and then we can talk about the wine program that you put in place.
Sure. So we actually just reformatted the menu because, sorry, DC, but sometimes there's difficulty in reading menus here in the city. So we had to, we had it all laid out just like boom, 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 boom.
Right.
And it didn't say like firsts or seconds or pastas or anything.
Do people need that much direction when they go to a restaurant?
Apparently. So we had to basically change the structure.
Everybody's nodding. Yes, they do.
It's all right.
But not Rick, because he's out in Montgomery County, and we in Montgomery County can read. Is that right, Rick?
That's true.
Thank you very much.
I'm staying out of that. So anyways, it's structured, you know, basically slightly traditional in the fact that it's first courses, and then it has pasta, then it mm-hmm. has full entrees, and then it has sides or whatever, extras, whatever you want to call them. But really, our stuff is kind of focused more basically how you would actually eat in Italy, not what you see here
in
the United
States. Well, let me tell you what, because, you know, Nikki's out a lot, and she eats in a lot of different places. I'm not out as much, and...
Because I like to go things, out and he doesn't.
Somebody's got to watch the kids, yell at them, you know. But one of the things that's the hardest to make, and I throw this in, I lived in Italy for 2 years, is gnocchi.
Mm-hmm.
It can either taste like erasers,
yeah,
or it can have that sort of that gentle touch, and it was great.
It's very different because it's a baked semolina, so it's a much different structure for a dish. It's not a traditional potato gnocchi, so it comes off super, super light.
The best.
And how did you put together the wine program?
So it started out a much more traditional approach. I was kind of like, you know, I'll do a big section of Tuscany and I'll do a big section of Piedmont, and then I'll throw in my own weird quirky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then I figured out that nobody actually knows anything about Italian wine for the most part. So everybody was asking questions anyways. So I figured, screw it. I'm just going to do all the weird stuff that I want to do anyways, because they're going to ask. So
what does that mean? What is weird stuff? I mean,
you know,
what does that mean?
I would say
for
that
you?
There's, for example, all these orange wines that are there. There's not a lot of like...
We should probably taste these.
Well, can you explain what an orange wine is?
Yeah. So
it's not made from oranges.
No, it can be. But that's that you find that in like Florida.
Okay.
So
it sounds like orange juice.
To kind of break it down very, very simply, it's very similar to a rosé. So mm-hmm. They leave the skins in contact with the actual juice after it's done pressing. Your wife is beckoning.
Yeah, I would like to try.
Well, I thought you had one.
I don't.
She doesn't.
What the hell with you?
Okay. But
that's just a very simple mm-hmm. kind of explanation. For me, orange wine kind of runs the gamut as much as white wine can run the gamut. There's extreme differences, like
Holy
you're currently
cow.
Experiencing. So the Venica that you're tasting
that's
right now,
me,
the
man.
Pinot Grigio, yeah, it's Oof. So for me.
Okay.
So the first
this
one you tasted,
beautiful.
The Pinot Grigio, that's like, that's very, very kids glovey. And why I say that
wait
is
a
because...
second. It's a Pinot Grigio.
Yeah.
But it's in, so if I were to see that on your menu, how would I know that it would be
it's
an orange wine?
Well, it's listed. I made a section for orange wines.
Okay.
So technically in Italy, this is called Romato. And mm-hmm. that simply means it's a white wine, specifically Pinot Grigio with skin contact.
Mm-hmm.
The difference being the skin gives it not only color, but it also leaches a different flavor profile. I mean, that doesn't really taste like Pinot Grigio.
Okay.
It's much more apricotty. It's much
yeah,
more
no,
rich.
Not at all. I mean, it doesn't look like a Pinot Grigio.
No. So it's interesting stuff. Okay. Now, this is all the way down the rabbit hole. So this is from Emilia Romagna.
I like going down the rabbit hole every now and then.
Who doesn't? So Emilia Romagna, this is Malvasia Bianco. But this is like, you know, months in contact with the skins on the actual juice.
Hmm.
This is slightly oxidated.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that you actually get skin tannin from it. There's like this salty kind of underlying presence that I think makes it really amazing with
it
food.
Actually doesn't taste like a wine. I mean,
no,
it has
no.
More
I mean,
of a...
for me,
it's like a liqueur. Yeah. Almost.
For me, it's just interesting. And I think it's really beneficial, kind of like to bridge the gap.
You've blown out your taste buds over the last couple of
years.
Yeah,
but maybe. But I'm curious. So, what would you suggest somebody drink that with at the restaurant?
It's great with pastas because it's got a really good salt content. It's really good with kind of like chicken, pork, things of that nature. But you know, you could go as far as duck.
Okay. All right. We have to take a break.
Yeah.
But when we come back, we're going to finish talking more about the Red Hen, and then we're going to get back into our wine versus beer battle and talk more beer and more beer. And then we're going to get a little local. We'll be back in just a sec.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television. Reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Signs, so subtle we may not notice them. Signs like loss of interest in activities. Signs like insomnia, fatigue, or withdrawing from friends.
Hey, dear, come play cards with us.
Even talking about wanting to die. These are signs of depression.
Hi, my name is Smitty. My husband, Congressman Jerry Connolly, and I urge you to take signs of depression seriously. Let your loved one know you care, then seek help from a doctor or mental health professional.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Come celebrate Central Farm Market's fifth anniversary season with the freshest produce, dairy, baked goods, fresh fish, meats, poultry, and specialty foods around. Enjoy music, wine tastings, cooking demos and classes, and kids' activities at two great locations, Sundays 9 to 1 in downtown Bethesda and Saturdays from 9 to 2 in North Bethesda, Rockville. Come out and see for yourself why Washingtonian and Bethesda magazines hail the markets as the best in the metro area. To learn more and sign up for the weekly e-blast, visit www.centralfarmmarkets.com. The two central locations in downtown Bethesda and North Bethesda, Rockville are kid-friendly and dog-friendly, have plenty of parking, and great food. For a listing of food artisans, events, and exact addresses, check out www.centralfarmmarkets.com. That's centralfarmmarkets.com. See you this weekend.
Hey, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to Sebastian Zouton.
Hi.
It's like romper room in here today.
Whoa. You don't talk till I tell you.
Hi.
But I do want to send a shout out to his dad, Dennis, who fell off a ladder. Dennis, guys our age aren't supposed to be on ladders, so get well soon.
That's right, old timer.
That's funny. So you want to talk to him about his wines.
Well, I do, because earlier in the show you said this was a good opening up the Red Hen was a great segue for you to make the kind of wines you wanted to make. Can you explain that? I mean, how do you get into making wines from here?
Okay. So I'm actually in the process right now. So for right now, the easiest thing for me to do you know what a custom crush facility is?
I do. Yes, of course. So, there's one in Alexandria.
Right.
Okay.
And there's a really good, I don't know anything about the Alexandria one. The one that Michael Shops owns out in Charlottesville, the guy's an amazing winemaker. He makes wine in Burgundy. He has his own vineyard in Burgundy as well as Virginia. So my process at this point
And what is it called? What is his place called?
Virginia Wine Works, I think.
Okay.
So right now the process for me is to go out to Charlottesville with Michael and find a vineyard. I specifically want to find a Viognier vineyard and make orange wine in Virginia.
Oh, neat.
That's the idea. So we'll see if it happens. But it's an interesting process. And having the custom crush facility really allows me a lot of leniency in terms of not having to overcommit all of my time there. Because I have a very talented winemaker that can kind of watch over it. I can go out there every week and say, you know, how are things going? So on and so forth. But for me, it's just a good way to get my foot in the door. And then, you know, eventually down the road, you know.
You're also doing that with beer, too, right? Didn't you have a beer recently?
Yeah, we did a project with DC Brow where I went out to Linden Vineyards and I picked up a whole bunch of Sauvignon Blanc lees, which is like the dead yeast cells that fall out of wine.
Mm-hmm.
And we aged their Saison on Sauvignon Blanc lees from Linden in one of their red wine barrels.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty interesting stuff. It came out pretty... It's actually not far off from an orange wine. It actually produced an orange beer, which was a total shot in the dark, but it worked out.
All right, we gotta unfortunately put the wraps on it, dude.
Fine.
So make sure everybody knows where Red Hen is.
1822 First Street.
And
Northwest.
It's a great place. I want to wish you luck.
Online,
you're about as close to family as somebody could be.
www.redhendc.com.
Ignore the woman behind the screen. But good luck. Knock them dead. Everybody check out the review in the post.
Yes,
you got
today.
A good one.
2.5 stars.
All right.
Thanks.
So back to Leah and Thor. You guys, you're going to be opening Right Proper Brewing Company in October, correct? Next door to...
And, something, and, knock on wood.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing? I mean,
yes.
Thor, give people... I mean, you've been on the show before, but tell people a little bit about your background.
A little bit. I got my start in the restaurant industry at Pizzeria Paradiso, where mm-hmm. I have to go bartend a double right after the show.
Okay.
and together with Ruth, we opened Birria Paradiso, which was the craft beer bar underneath mm-hmm. The Georgetown location in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopped to Philadelphia for a little bit and then back, and I worked for Robert Wiedmeyer for... almost 5 years mm-hmm. as general manager of Brasserie Beck, beer director of Brasserie Beck, and managing partner of Muscle Bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left in September 2011 to write the business plan and raise the money for Right Proper.
And you guys used Kickstarter for that, right?
Indiegogo.
Indiegogo.
Yeah,
okay.
For a little bit.
And was that helpful? Did that work?
Not so much money-wise. We raised just under $8,000, but it did allow us to buy a lot of brewing equipment, which is now sitting in Mike and Dave's brewery, 3 stars. Thank you very much, guys. We love
you. You guys are inbred like
cockroaches. You're not the only one.
We love you. It also did give us it was a big promotional platform for us. It helped spread the word mm-hmm. a lot.
And what are you looking to do at this brewery? Like, give us a little
We
umbrella.
Want to be a real neighborhood brew pub, a real neighborhood gathering place.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the tagline for our logo is going to be Made in Shaw. So we want to be kind of a real part of the culture of Shaw. We're right next to the Howard Theater.
Mm-hmm.
The building that we're in used to be Frank Holliday's Pool Hall, where Duke Ellington, before he's even 15 years old, was sneaking in to play the piano with some of the greats that were coming over from the theater. So there's a lot of rich history that we want to pay homage to and really just kind of be a part of the community there. Hopefully we're going to be making great beer with a 5-barrel brewing system. Inexpensive restaurant, inexpensive but fresh and good and quality. And
great.
Just be one of those great neighborhood spots where you don't have to break the bank every time you go and what we serve
cool.
is
you're
fresh.
Talking to my husband.
Well, let's get I love you, Thor. Let's get back to the beer versus wine. What are you guys pouring next?
I brought a ginger beer
Ooh.
From Krabby's. So if we want to pass that down, dump mm-hmm. what you have. This mm-hmm. is just one of the most refreshing beers I've had in a very long time. Perfect for the summer weather.
Is it alcoholic or not?
It is alcoholic, absolutely.
Because ginger beer is normally not alcoholic, right?
Well, there's, ginger ale, Schweppes ginger ale and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not alcoholic. This packs a little bit of a punch, just over 5% alcohol. You get a lot of that big, fresh ginger taste. You get a nice sweetness on the palate.
Oh, it smells good.
And then the that little bit of white pepper from the alcohol kind of rounds everything out. I like to serve it over ice with a little lime wedge as well. And it just creates a very refreshing.
This could be a tough competition, this one. This rosé.
This rosé is beautiful.
Perfect for the summer. The Stoltman rosé. This is a Sangiovese Grenache blend
mm-hmm.
From California, from Santa Ynez. But
We've
just
been
very,
to
very
Santa
light.
Inez.
Have you?
Mm-hmm.
Very light, nice, dry, nice touch of a little spice and floral to it. Very refreshing for
beautiful.
A hot day like today.
Yeah.
All right.
Intravenous with rosé right now. It's so
perfect. It's terrible. When I wake up in the morning, she's got that needle in her arm.
She hasn't even taken a sip.
Awful. All right. So let's get on to 3 stars. I like your hat. I just noticed your hat. Your 3 stars hat. Cool,
they
man.
They are decked. 3 stars
Dave
is always
Coleman,
decked.
Mike McGarvey,
head to toe.
Step up to the mic, boys.
You know what? You can move that mic over if you want. Yeah.
Back that up.
Yeah. You know what? We'll throw Sebastian out and one of you guys can have his mic. So, you guys have a big party coming up. Yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's talk about it.
Get in there.
There
you got it, brother.
There you go.
Third installment in our Artists and Artisans celebrations. So this is a party we throw on quarterly. The first one was back in December.
Which I went to.
Which you were there, and it was
Why
awesome.
Why wasn't I there? What the
I
hell
don't know
you?
Where you were.
If you were babysitting.
Let's back off this. Bull. I was babysitting
I took
again.
Jason.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so... It's basically an opportunity for us mm-hmm. to showcase other small local businesses, some we're really passionate about as small business owners ourselves. This is kind of our way of showcasing our friends and exposing them maybe to people who aren't aware of their businesses. And so we take all of our beer friends who love our product and turn them on to other businesses.
This is the 28th?
This is on the 20th.
Next Sunday. Week from today.
There's a lot going on the 28th.
Yeah, there is.
So tell us about who you've curated for this event.
Okay, so we got our friends from Rappahannock River Oysters over at Union Market are coming by for the third time in a row. Mm-hmm. They're definitely a paramount staple of our events. Mm-hmm. Everybody loves their oysters. They're probably the best oysters in town. We've also got George Grau from Impala, D.C., new taco spot over on 8th Street. We've mm-hmm. got Chef from Six Engine coming by. He's got a very luau-themed menu that he's going to be providing. Fun. We're going to be roasting a pig. We've got Righteous Cheese coming by.
Is the pig aware of this?
The pig right now probably doesn't know, but he's going to have a real rude awakening.
Wilbur.
Oh, no.
Such a service at the end of the day.
Exactly. So. We also got a bunch of photographers, local photographers, that are going to be showcasing their artwork. Mm-hmm. We figured this time around we would kind of showcase the people who curate the images that convey so much.
Is one of those possibly Kendra Kuliga?
Actually, Kendra's, to my knowledge, not a photographer. She's more of a graphic designer.
But you said artists. No other artists?
Well, we've got a couple of graffiti kids coming in and doing a huge mural, but yeah.
What does that mean?
That means they're not doing it on the railroad overpasses for one day. That's what it means.
Actually, we do that all the time.
You sound like an old man when you say stuff like that.
Oh, and you're so hip. I know. I'd love it if my kid was out painting the railroad trestle, what you
are,
would say.
Are kids really doing that?
Yeah,
is this something
absolutely.
Kids are doing?
Have you driven around D.C. recently?
Look up from the road, honey.
Yeah, right. Jeez. No, it's probably good that she's watching
traffic. Surrender, right. Dorothy. Right.
But yeah, we've got a couple of local graffiti guys mm-hmm. who are coming in and doing a mural piece that we've loosely titled Angels and Drunks. So it's going to be, each one's going to work on a different half of the mural. So one guy will be doing the angels, the other will be doing the drunks.
We're going to change the name of the show to Angels and Drunks.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, it is pretty close.
Guess who's who.
And then you've got your first anniversary. I can't believe it's been a year, but your first anniversary party's coming up too, right?
Yeah, that's right. August 9th, we'll be at Church Key, and that'll be our one-year anniversary.
That's wild.
And but you're doing that at Church Key. You're not doing that at the brewery. Are you celebrating the launch of your beers being in other facilities?
That was our launch to the market last year. It was at Church Key. So mm-hmm. now we're just coming back 1 year later mm-hmm. With a new arsenal of new stuff. Some of it that we're releasing at the party is a nice place to do that. Mm-hmm. And others that, you know, we'll have there on tap as well.
Well, I mean, I'm sure Thor knows what it takes to do a brewery, but since you're a year ahead of him, so to speak, can you talk a little bit about, like, the beer you brought in today is new. I mean, how often are you changing your beers? How many beers stay the same, and how do you decide when you want to change the beers and you want to do new releases? I mean, how do you keep your product consistent?
Well, that's a different story altogether.
Am I asking two questions? All right, ask two questions.
Consistency is a totally different thing.
Okay.
But when we talk about our portfolio of beers, we try to have four on tap at any given time that people can get on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the weather dictates that, because people's tastes gravitate to what the weather is. Mm-hmm. Some of our beers that we do during the winter time in the fall, they're bigger, heavier, richer beers. Whereas as we hit, you know, the warmer months, we found, you know, people's palates are looking for something lighter or something, mm-hmm. A little easier in the hot weather.
So do you have one beer that's available all year, or you know, it's a seasonal thing, it's constantly changing?
We have a couple beers that are available year round. Our peppercorn saison is something that we have both in the fall, winter, summer, spring, all of that. We've also got the Movement, which is our American Pale Ale. That's part of our flagships.
That's what you brought in first time around, wasn't it?
No, God, first time around, I think we brought you peppercorn.
And what is this? What are we drinking today?
Yeah, so this is a special beer that we're releasing with the party. This is a barrel-aged saison. We call it Harvester of Sorrows. Mm-hmm. This is our peppercorn saison, actually, aged in a Cabernet barrel for mm-hmm. about 8 months, and then blended with a fresh new saison that we did, something a little bit lighter for the springtime. So you'll find there's a lot of real fruity flavors mm-hmm. in here from the wood. Some coconut, just a lot of real brightness to it.
Okay, well, Kendra, we brought you in here today, so I want to make sure we get you on the mic. You do a lot of the designs for Three Star Brewing, right? Like, you're wearing the fabulous skull.
Yeah, actually, it's a collaboration with Dave. Mm-hmm. You know, we meet at wherever we meet, like at Meridian Pint, and over
A few beers.
Maybe
some whiskeys.
Right?
Yeah.
I'll just ask him, you know, what direction does he want to go? What is mm-hmm. he thinking? And then we pull up images that are inspired based on his vision, mm-hmm. and then I put it together.
She's like my muse. She can translate the nonsense that's in my head into visual.
So are
designs.
You working on new pieces of art for
that's
them
frightening
now?
To think about.
Yeah, actually, we're working on Born Sinner, which is going to be released for next week.
Okay.
So I guess you'll have to come and see it.
You'll have to come and see it.
He's got, you know, some really cool ideas that I'm really excited about translating.
Well, just tell us quickly, because we don't have a ton of time. Tell us how you came up with the skull motif.
Saul Dave, we were actually going to go in the,
I think it's because that's what happens when you drink his beer and you look in the mirror. That's what you
no, that's we're going to go, I didn't say that.
We were going to go World War II motif. Mm-hmm. And, I was prepared for that. You know, it's like, that's pretty big, because I was going to paint a mural of it on the wall. And I was really psyching myself up to how I was like going to actually accomplish that. And then he's like, you know what? I was talking to my wife. And we're going to change the direction completely. Let's do Sugar Skull. And I was like, great. And then the challenge was how to incorporate the DC flag.
Right, which you did so well. I mean, it's amazing. It's such a great look.
They're both Irish, so we put the...
you wouldn't be from Ireland, would you not?
So we,
not
we
with our drinking habits.
I hate to do this, but if we don't take a commercial break, we can't pay for the show.
We have to take a commercial break. All right. Guys, just quickly tell people where the event is. July 28th.
At the brewery, 6400 Chilham Place Northwest. It's Upper DC. You can get your tickets on our website. There is a link to our Eventbrite site. It's also 3-star summer celebration.eventbrite.com.
Okay, great.
And you can walk from Metro.
Excellent. All right, guys. Thanks so much. This is Nikki Nellis and David Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Each day, over 49 million Americans live in households that experience hunger, including 17 million children. Johnson's Florist and Garden Centers want to help. They're asking gardeners in the Washington area to plant extra this growing season, and at harvest time, bring that extra to one of their stores in D.C., Kensington, and Olney, Maryland. All donations will go to a local organization that feeds the hungry. Visit johnsonsflorist.com to learn more about the Plant a Row for the Hungry initiative. johnsonsflorist.com. Live music, health screenings, food, fitness demos, and more, all at Community Day 2013, and all free. Yes, that's free. Join the Federal City Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated, on Saturday, August 10th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the ARC in Southeast Washington for this annual event set to engage and foster health, education, and political awareness. For more information about Community Day 2013, visit the FCACDST.org.
Mommy.
David.
Are we on?
We're on air.
I was looking at the food. All right, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with Nikki and David Nellis, and we are going to change subject matter drastically here. Eat Local Week starts shortly.
Mm-hmm. It starts tomorrow.
That's what I meant by shortly.
Mm-hmm.
And Danielle Vogel knows all about that and why it's so important. She opened Glenn's Garden Market, a full-service, locally sourced grocery that's down at kind of Florida and Connecticut-ish.
Yeah, it's the corner of 20th and S. It's the old Secret Safeway location.
It's a great spot.
It was a Townhouse Safeway, right?
It was indeed.
I remember
but
it really
you come
well.
From, you've got a supermarket, food market pedigree. And
a little bit.
But you were an attorney and you left that to do this. So what happened there?
Well, I was working on Capitol Hill for 10 years on environmental policy, and in the last two in the Senate on climate change policy. And there was a little bit of a change in the politics on Capitol Hill that made progress pretty much completely impossible.
You mean like it's not working?
It's not working.
Mm, fascinating.
And so we tried really hard. It didn't go anywhere. The climate change bill failed. But I'm very personally committed to the issue, and I wanted to figure out a way to make small-scale progress in the mm-hmm. absence of large-scale legislative progress. So I come from a long line of grocers. My dad started a grocery store. His dad started a grocery store. My mom's
Wait,
dad.
Wait, who started Pathmark?
My mom's dad.
That's amazing. I mean, I grew up in New Jersey. There were Pathmarks.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And my dad started the Food Emporium, which is mostly in New York.
New York. Mm-hmm.
And so there's definitely a lot of genetic coding mm-hmm. pointing me in that direction. And I figured that if I could open a full grocery store that only sourced locally, then I would be able to make progress one bite at a time.
Okay.
Couldn't pass the bill.
This but is you're just doing
a,
this.
Yeah, it's another path to pursue the same goal.
But how hard is it to open up a market where you're sourcing locally? And are we just talking, for people who haven't been to the market yet,
sure.
are we just talking vegetable produce? Are we talking canned goods? I mean, what's at the market and how are you sourcing these things?
So the misconception before we opened was that it was basically going to be a produce stand.
Mm-hmm.
It is a full-service grocery store, which okay. means you walk in to a craft beer and wine bar where, of course, we have three stars on tap.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Look at them preening like kitty cats.
Which we love.
Yeah.
And we source everything in the store from the states of the Chesapeake Bay watershed, which means we reach from Virginia up to New York.
Okay.
But we carry the full range of products. So shelf-stable grocery, dairy products. You know, you can get your ice cream.
You guys make your own charcuterie, too,
we
don't you?
Do. We've got an awesome curing box where we make our own charcuterie in-house.
Mm-hmm.
The most recent round was Calabrian Soppressata, which is pretty delicious. But we've got prepared foods and shelf-stable grocery, dairy, meat, beer, wine, the whole nine.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how, as you were putting this concept together, how did you go about finding all your resources?
There's a lot of visiting farmers markets, visiting other small specialty food stores, going to supermarkets and seeing what they were marketing as local, reading
right.
Magazines like Food Shed, which was Flavor at the time,
mm-hmm.
And just doing the footwork.
So, well, is it all organic or is it?
So it's not all organic. And this is a question we get.
But organic
often.
Is not as important as local. So
precisely.
Precisely. Because a lot of people who would like to be organic can't afford the accreditation, and it's so, and it changes in different areas. So I think it's really hard for people. It's not the important
key.
Just
asking a question.
That's exactly right. But it's a prevalent misconception. So organic is a USDA certification that's incredibly expensive to get.
Mm-hmm.
And so we seek out small artisanal food producers and farmers that treat their land and their animals and their ingredients with respect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily imperative that they get that organic certification because they're treating their crops with as much respect as you would hope for in an organic farmer.
All right, well, let's talk to Chef Mike Kisses here. And you needed a chef because you were doing a lot of stuff in-house, like the charcuterie and all
exactly.
that.
Exactly. And
so mm-hmm. where'd you come from?
Well, my mom and dad.
I was born in a log cabin. Where did Danielle find you?
I spent the last 10 years at Whole Foods Market and in a very public role. It was they called it cooking coach. They took tenured chefs and put them out on the floor to talk to people about where the food's coming from, what it's about. But Danielle came and got me at a good point in my life. It was Whole Foods is big, and you know it's hard to be part of that conversation about local when they have so many other conversations going on.
Mm-hmm.
So Danielle offered me a chance to really get back down to what I felt was important, which is local. And you know, I'm from a rural background where I knew where my food was coming from, and I knew
so
where my
were
food was going.
Born in a log cabin.
Well, pretty close. Mm-hmm.
Well, you and know? As we were talking off air, you said you keep it vegan at home.
My household is vegan. Yeah, there's no meat or cheese. We do fudge on honey, but it doesn't hurt the bees.
Meanwhile, he handed me a roast beef.
No, but he's only vegan at home.
I insisted on that.
Right. No. But I think that's fascinating. But you do eat meat.
I do eat meat when
I'm
out and
about. But your household is completely vegan.
Mm-hmm. I have a baby that's a year and a half old that has never eaten meat and only had a couple grandma sessions of ice cream, which is permissible.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
How do you balance that in your cooking?
Well, I mean, I'm a classically trained French chef, just like every other chef in the city. So it's like, you know, you
They're
grow up using how
French
to
trained. Don't kid yourself.
Butter and cream and, you know, meat is great and, you know, pork is perfume. And
mm-hmm.
So I still have that. And that's, you know, when my wife went vegan about 4 years ago, that's where the huge argument started inside my mind, not between me and my wife. We get along.
Let me take you to another subject. Do you make your own mustards?
No, these are big rigs mustards.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome, isn't it?
So, you tear the back of your throat out, but it's delicious.
I love it.
He's a third-generation family farmer from Loom, West Virginia, named Calvin Riggleman. And the products are called Big Rigs, and that was his marine nickname.
That's what
big
I feel
rigs.
Like I swallowed.
It's good, isn't it?
And it's a burn back there that's crazy.
Well, let me ask, because I would assume sourcing local and carrying all that product is it hard to make it cost effective as far as, you know, people in this town will spend money mm-hmm. on quality food mm-hmm. and they do want to go local. I mean, we see it, there's so much happening here. But is that hard to do, to find the right price range to put your products at?
Yep. But folks are used to shopping at Whole Foods and used to shopping at farmers markets. And
so you would say you were on the same
price
level?
We're definitely on the same price level. Mm-hmm. And the fact is you are supporting little teeny tiny artisanal food makers mm-hmm. and they're making super duper high quality food. It's not Safeway. You right. know, you're not going to find Tostitos and Doritos.
But that's not your audience. I mean, it's not your audience. Right. I mean, your audience, I would assume, is those who...
No Tostitos?
No Tostitos.
I mean, I would
we
assume...
We have Nana Cocinas. They're delicious.
You know, the people who go to farmer's market, the people who are buying local beers, the people who are, you know, even Whole Foods shoppers are your audience. I mean, because mm-hmm. not everybody who goes to Whole Foods is an educated shopper, but a lot of people are, and they are asking the right questions. So I assume that those are the people that you're looking for.
That's exactly right. You know, and on top of it, there is no such thing as an economy of scale when you're talking about people that literally make the product, put it in the back of their car, bring it to us, and we mm-hmm. sell out everything they're making.
Well, you're also like a 21st century version of, what was it, Larimer's and Snyder's and the specialty grocers that have gone bye-bye that were kind of in that area. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah, Larimer's just right around the corner.
Yeah.
I used to shop there
and
when I first moved
to drive, we lived in Chevy Chase. I used to drive all the way down there to shop and bypass Giant and all those guys because they had such great stuff. So,
but yeah. I think also the big difference is from a Larimer's, you know, 25 years ago, you know, there wasn't a Whole Foods and there wasn't a lot of farmers markets. So it was harder to find, you know, a gourmet product, you know, mm-hmm. and a quality product.
Well,
so
I got to jump in. Let's make sure everybody knows where your market is in real life and online.
Thank you. So we're at the corner of 20th and S Streets. It's 2001 S Street Northwest. Mm-hmm. And online, we're just glensgardenmarket.com.
And I just want to make sure people know, but you have a lot of prepared foods
lots
available.
And lots. We've got about 25 menu items in the case every single day mm-hmm. and a full service deli.
Excellent.
All right,
thanks.
You Addie's boys, step up to the mic. So Addie's is a fabulous neighborhood restaurant up on, I'm sure I'm saying things that
your
people know.
Your timing is all off. I just want you to know that.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, your timing is all off.
My timing's great.
Yeah, your timing's all off.
Oh, well.
Okay.
It's Jeff and Barbara Black's first restaurant, right?
Correct.
Many moons ago. And Greg Scudlow's the GM, and Rick Cook is the executive chef. And we've got them in because they've got a big crab feast coming up. Yes?
That's correct, yes.
On the 28th,
yeah,
right?
It's one week from today.
Yeah. Okay, what time is the crab feast?
Well, we've got two different seatings. So you can come from 1 to 3, mm-hmm. Then we break for an hour to reset and do it again from 4 to 6.
So see, you can still go to Three Star Brewery mm-hmm. and hit their event, and then go break some crabs.
Exactly.
Right?
It could be a perfect day.
It could be a perfect day. It sounds like it.
So we had crabs last night, and we were at a table with folks who had never eaten hard shells. I mean, they didn't know how to pop them open or all of that. What's the technique? It's hard to do. It's radio is a theater of the mind. But what's the right technique? Look at Rick. He's like, damn, I'm going to have to do this.
There's a million ways, I guess. I brought something.
Well, yeah, you're gonna. That's what you're supposed to be
doing
right now.
Yeah, I'm supposed to be clearing off.
Okay, why don't you clear it off and do that? No. So, well, you know what? While you're setting that up, why don't we bring Thor and Leah back on? You guys can set that up, and then we'll talk about how to do a demo. Okay? You guys come over here. What are you guys going to pour next? And by the way, the rosé was absolutely delicious.
Oh, good. I'm glad you liked it.
Did you taste the crabbies?
I did, and I really liked it, but
it
tasted like soda.
Wicked good dark and stormy, too.
Does it? I mean, it was very soda-y, don't you think?
It's very soda-y, and then it's kind of dangerous because the alcohol will kind of creep up on you because you feel like you're drinking the soda.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay, that makes sense.
So what's the wine, babe?
So the wine is a Gavi di Gavi. So the grape is Gavi and the region is Gavi from the Piedmont region of Italy.
Wait, say it again.
It's very easy. Gavi di Gavi.
Okay.
G-A-V-I is the grape and the region. And it's just an Italian, a famous Italian white region. Mm-hmm. And Italian whites are really great for the summer, just very dry, a lot of floral minerality in this one, as well as pear notes. But give it a try. I think it's really delicious and unusual. It's not it doesn't have the acidity of a Sauvignon Blanc or the weight of a Chardonnay. It's just more of a middle, very white, very lean, dry floral wine.
And how about the beer?
The beer is unfortunately not local. but okay. It is absolutely delicious. It is from the brewery, Patrick Ruse Brewery.
It doesn't all have to be local in order for it to be good.
Yeah. So Patrick Ruse Brewery called The Brewery from Sarasota, California. This is his take on a Belgian strong golden ale or Belgian triple. He is an absolute master when it comes to Belgian-style beers. He uses fantastic yeast. He uses American hops, and as you can tell, the beer is very, very, very dry. Yeah, and that's what's great. That's what I really like about it. What makes it so refreshing is there is not too much residual sugar left in that beer.
No, they don't agree with me. You don't agree with me?
Can I try it?
Not even close.
No, is that like a? Isn't that like a? Would you ever want anybody to compare you to Ankerstein?
It's a very specific style.
What the hell? Okay. Nothing's wrong with
it. Nothing like Ankerstein.
Different style of beer.
Okay.
Different style. Different yeast and everything.
Okay.
Hey, but we'll educate you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be cracking
I'm gonna go
some...
postal on
okay, stop speaking. When we come back, we're going to be talking about how to crack a crab. This is David and Nikki Nels for Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Escape the everyday to the close-by Early Mountain Vineyards in Madison, Virginia. A relaxing getaway just a short drive from D.C., it has an award-winning tasting room, breathtaking views of the Blue Ridge, and the best of Virginia wines, locally grown food, live music, and slow sunsets. Visit earlymountain.com or follow them on Twitter at Early Mountain. Mention Foodie and the Beast and this ad for a free flight of wines at your next visit.
You may think modern-day slavery doesn't happen, but human trafficking is in every country, state, and neighborhood, even yours. Still, there are more people held in slavery today than any other time in human history. Breaking Out Corporation is a proactive anti-human trafficking organization that investigates, identifies, and brings victims home. You have the power. Go beyond just talk. BreakingOutCorp.org needs your help to free human beings from sex trafficking and slavery. Find out how you can help by going to BreakingOutCorp.org.
It's not always easy being a dad.
When's the fairy princess coming?
Any minute now. What? What do you mean she's not coming?
But it's always worth it.
It's the fairy princess!
It is I! Groove's Zinklepell!
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life.
I know it's really you, Drew. I'm just pretending for the other kids.
Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4-DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
If talking and texting interferes with a walk down the street, imagine what might happen if you're driving. Focus on the road, not your conversation. Your brain can't do both safely. No dialing, no talking, no texting to arrive safe.
Hi, I'm Brooke Delaney.
And I'm Congressman John Delaney.
As a teen, I know not to text while driving. My dad and I ask you to focus on the road, not your conversation.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nels, and now we're talking the Crab Feast at Addie's coming up on the 28th with Greg Scudlow, and Rick Cook. Rick, and you're going to talk about taking that crab apart.
We're going to talk about taking the crab apart, yeah.
All right, so tell us about, because a lot of people don't know, make sure that mic is in front of your face. A lot of people don't know how to do it. They get the big crab and they start hammering away. I know that's the wrong thing to do.
I guess mainly I brought some home utensils.
Okay.
The mallet, it seems like you're just bashing the hell out of it.
Okay.
You know? It is kind of delicate. There's a lot of shells and soft meat, and then the harder shell if you get kind of there for that nice sweet meat. So basically I just brought a spoon and knife, what you have from home. Mainly you kind of dismantle the whole thing. Just kind of, you know, crack the claws off.
So you take the claws off first?
I do.
Okay.
You just set them aside for later. The inside body is the most work, and then the claws are kind of the easiest part, so you leave those for the end.
What about those little tentacle thingies that are under the claws? Because depending on how the crab is cooked, if you pull them off carefully, you can get a nice chunk of meat, can't you?
No.
Are you referring to the legs?
The legs. Those are.
Oh, yeah, the legs. Yeah, definitely. If they're cooked right and you pull them off, you can definitely get it out. Eventually, you're going to have to break the whole thing down anyway. So there's this kind of apron underneath. The males look like the Washington Monument, if you will.
Okay.
And the female will look more like the Capitol, kind of giving away their gender, if you will.
It looks like a pop top.
I didn't know that. That's cool to
Absolutely,
know.
Absolutely, okay. Yeah.
All right.
So really, you just...
Talk about local. What a way to make that happen.
Yeah. Being from Maryland and all of that, you know, I feel like... So mainly you just, what is that, we call it the apron, if you will. Pull that back, stick your home knife in there and just kind of separate the whole thing. It's great sound.
exposing the whole inside.
Mm-hmm.
Really, there's muscle on the inside of the shell that goes along with each leg. So we talk about pulling that one out if we can do it. Might work.
Everybody's waiting. Can
mainly,
make
I
it
just
happen?
Crack them in
imagine
half.
Imagine people at home
with like
don't
one
have a
half
crab
the side.
Handy in there.
Yeah.
Dismembering a spider.
We had a bunch here, so. I guess we'll give it a try, just for you. Oh, look at that.
Oh, look at that. Oh, no. He did. Very good.
So you don't want to rush through the whole thing. It's kind of like a slow 2-3 hour
I think
process.
There's two schools of thought. Eat what you find right away, or build that huge pile that you can dunk
right.
in butter.
My father's a build huge pile and just like take care of it at the end, work through the whole thing. I'm kind of eat as you go.
I'm an instant gratification.
Exactly, exactly. You see that? How am I going to set that aside and then, you know?
Right, just leave it there. Yeah. Somebody's going to steal that if you set that aside. That's what's going to happen, right?
There you go.
And I like holding that mallet though. There's something about hammering it, but I always hammer too hard.
It's such a big thing. You just whack the hell out of it, though, and that's where the shell kind of gets integrated, and you kind of have a bad experience, and you get shunned away from it. But so you get onto the claw, and the claw seems to be the easiest part in the whole bashing experience. Really, again, having a smaller tool, you're doing less damage.
Mm-hmm.
So really, you just start with the, I guess you would call that the forearm. Or
let me jump in, Greg. So, you know, Rick's back in the kitchen doing this. When you have your crab feast and you get newbies and they don't know what to do, do you put your arm around them, sit down next to them, and show them how to do a crab?
Certainly we can. However, being in Maryland, being the middle of July and summertime, most of the people that, we did two of these crab feasts.
Are you saying if they don't
summer.
Know they're too stupid to eat a crab? Is that the...
Are you saying
I'm
you,
a nice
they
guy.
Know what they're getting themselves
you know?
Into.
But yeah, they do know what they're getting themselves into, like Chef just said. I mean, certainly when they sit down, they're going to have, you know, a pointy knife to kind of dismantle that Washington Monument, as Rick put it, as well as a mallet, just because it's kind of a traditional thing. But people kind of know what they're doing.
So we how do you do this at Addie's? I mean, are you, because Addie's is not a paper-topped kind of restaurant. I mean, you know, how are you guys setting it up there?
Well, we are fortunate to have the flexibility of two separate patios, one in the front of the restaurant and one in the rear, that seat a combined about 70 people. So outdoor crab feast is kind of a perfect thing. So we're able to put the tables together and kind of set up family style seating, put crab paper down, you know, buckets for your parts and, you know, mallets and knives and cold draft beer and the whole setup. So it's, you know, having that outdoor seating does give us the flexibility to do something like a crab feast.
And you're roasting a pig that day too?
Yeah, we are.
Jeff can't help himself, right?
Yeah.
Are you doing it in the Chinese box?
That'd be an
all-night
thing. You know, we were going to, but we're actually going to do like a whole smoked. I'm going to like get there at midnight the night before and just kind of care for the little baby all the way until it's done. So we're going to smoke a pig for maybe 20 hours.
Okay.
And then just kind of chop it up Carolina style. Seems pig and crab go hand in hand. And then beer kind of makes the whole thing go around.
Okay. I knew a guy in college who tried to smoke a pig. It didn't work out.
Yeah. I as well God. Have failed.
I think he says that like once a month, like smoking fish, smoking pig. I mean, the joke's old.
Yeah, come up with something new. I love that joke.
Okay, you like it.
And Dave Coleman liked it. I don't care if you like it.
All right, finish. How are you eating the arms and the claw? How
the
are we doing it?
The claw. Mm-hmm. So really, again, like I said, this is the whole where the mallet kind of comes into play. Just kind of give. It's kind of a triangular shape, so you just give a whack on each side. Glorious sound. And then really nice and gentle, just kind of pull it apart. This is working out perfectly. I didn't think this would go this well.
But now, can I ask a question? How well the crab is cooked
100%
depend on how much meat you're getting out of it?
Yes. There's I guess a little fin cartilage in here. That if you don't cook it well enough, it'll stick to that.
Okay.
And if you cook it too well, it'll stick to the shell.
Okay.
So it's got to be kind of right down the middle. A lot of people like the body meat. A lot of people like the claw meat. Some people think the claw is the best, you know.
Right.
So, and then
we can debate that another time.
Another time, yeah. Really, it all tastes just about the same. It's all crab.
Great.
So,